Running a business shouldn't feel like surviving a software group project. One app for accounting, another for inventory, another for sales, and somehow none of them talk to each other. That's where Odoo comes in, an all-in-one business management software that brings every part of your business together, from sales and accounting to inventory and marketing, all in one powerful platform. No messy integrations, no bouncing between tabs, and best of all, no spreadsheets. Stop managing software and start managing your business with one unified system. Try for free today at odoo.com/iHeartRadio. That's odoo.com/iHeartRadio.
Yep, he's planning another project. So this Father's Day at Lowe's, tap into free gifts for dad. Get a free select Craftsman power tool when you buy a Craftsman B20 charger with 2 amp hour and 4 amp hour batteries. Plus, get a free DeWalt power tool when you buy a select 20-volt max XR 4-amp-hour battery kit. Dad knows. Our best lineup is here at Lowe's. Valid through 7/14 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Save big money on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Get your project started right with our huge selection of concrete and mortar mixes. Our concrete products are great for a variety of applications, from installing a walkway to setting a post. View our entire selection of concrete mixes and supplies in-store and on Menards.com. Plus, check out the weekly flyer for more great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Feel your best and amplify your everyday look with Thrive Cosmetics. Go to thrivecosmetics.com/shine26 for an exclusive offer of 20% off your first order. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS.com/shine26.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Samuel Bateman thought the two outsiders at his table were gonna make him famous. He had no idea Christine Marie had fallen for a false prophet once herself and could read every move he was making the second he made it. Christine is the woman at the center of the Netflix documentary, Trust Me, the False Prophet. She and her husband, Tolga, moved to Short Creek along the Utah-Arizona border to make a different film. Then Bateman stepped out of the wreckage Warren Jeffs left behind, declared himself the new prophet, started taking spiritual wives, some of them children, and let two outsiders with cameras into his house. It cost him 50 years in federal prison. This first segment is about how she got in, the cover story, the double life, the moment filmmaker quietly became mole. She joins myself and Robin Drake, retired FBI special agent and chief of the Counterintelligence Behavioral Analysis Program, to discuss her work in Short Creek and the work you saw in the Netflix documentary, Trust Me, the False Prophet. Christine, let's start with this. You and Tolga came to Short Creek for something else entirely. You didn't necessarily show up there expecting to meet Samuel Bateman, not to chase a man like that. Let's back up before Sam even enters the picture. What's your original project? What's your original inspiration to go to Short Creek before Sam even enters your life? What's your thoughts on what the next 5 to 10 years are going to look like for you before Sam?
Interesting question, because we were living in Las Vegas. I was finishing my PhD, so I was at the point where I was working on my dissertation research and I could live wherever I wanted. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to move out of Las Vegas and help the people from Short Creek, believing that all of them were victims of some kind and some kind of religious trauma. And because I had experience with that and developed an expertise in that, I thought, you know, let me go and help the people who've left the FLDS understand what happened to them. And then things unfolded from there.
Did you go into that understanding how difficult it might be to reach someone who has gone through that? I know, obviously, you've had your own experiences, and you are so uniquely qualified for everything that you did and everything that you went through. But having that experience for oneself and making those own realizations are very different than helping others necessarily get to that point. What kind of wall did you face, or what kind of hill did you climb? Was it as steep as you expected?
Oh my goodness. It was more complicated than I imagined, because the FLDS at this time were very reclusive. Mm-hmm. They would, you know, they were encouraged not to talk to outsiders. So I didn't expect that I would ever really have any FLDS friends. I was focusing on the ex-FLDS. Mm-hmm. But even then, they have this in-group, out-group bias that's been ingrained in them from birth. You know, either you're a member or you're a non-member, you're from a high-status family or a low-status family. I mean, this us versus them thinking was very strong. So even though I thought I will do my best to try to help the ex-FLDS, I was still an outsider to them. So that was tough, and it took a lot for me to have any breakthrough at all.
What is it like there in Short Creek? I mean, you came in as a complete outsider. Is it, I mean, as an outsider coming into a very close-knit community, you had to have stood out like a sore thumb, I would think. I mean, tell me about that, and how long were you trying to become part of the fabric of this you know, this community that is in a bit of chaos at the moment, prior to meeting Sam?
Well, I started trying to build trust with the community actually the year before I moved there in 2015. And what I did was I decided that since the FLDS don't have Christmas, and since Warren Jeffs had apparently banned all the toys, now that there was a group of ex-FLDS, I needed to teach him about Christmas.
Meisterburger.
oh my goodness. It was like I was going to be the antidote to the Grinch who stole Christmas.
Yes.
And I had this alter ego, you know, as Mrs. Gingerbread, which you might have seen a little clip of me as a ventriloquist. Okay. Yeah. So I'm like, I'm gonna do my puppets and bring Christmas to these children that don't even know about Christmas. So that my first foray into gaining trust in the community happened the year before I moved there. And we brought in semi-truckloads of toys, and we had this big dinner called the First Christmas, where we explained what the Christmas tree is for and what candy canes represent and all this stuff. So that was number one. So that was just trying to earn the trust of the ex-FLDS. And that was a lot of fun. Then my husband and I noticed some evictions going on and started realizing that something didn't feel right, the way they were being handled. And we took photos and we shared them on Facebook, like, what in the heck is going on here? And then that created sort of a World War III among the town, among the FLDS, ex-FLDS. Mm-hmm. And because they just thought, as outsiders, we can't possibly know like the ins and outs of why people were being evicted that way. Mm-hmm. But they didn't know that we had been educated on it and we knew the other side. So we met some people, two FLDS ladies at a gas station nearby. And I just went up to them and said, you know, I'm so sorry for what you're going through. And they were like, what are we going through? We're going through a lot, but which thing are you talking about? And I told them about the pictures on Facebook. Uh-huh. and the insane response. I mean, the outside world was in agreement with us, but the people from the town weren't happy that we were, you know, sharing these photos. And we had permission of everybody in the photos to share them. So go ahead.
You were trying to advocate for them.
I was.
You know, so what were they upset about? When they're pushing back, what is the pushback about?
Well, the ex-FLDS were getting the properties that were being evicted. So the FLDS were being evicted. The ex-FLDS were getting those properties. So for for us to be saying, hey, these evictions, this seems wrong. And there's a lot more to it. It just created trouble among the people who were going to benefit by getting those properties.
Okay.
So, but there was also a large sector of town that respected us for what we were doing because they agreed. So, you know, we were kind of in the middle, but we didn't know any FLDS. So we were advocating for the FLDS without even knowing any of them, just saying, this doesn't seem right. So when we met these two ladies at the gas station, they were amazed. And that was like, why are these outsiders defending us? You know, and that was the beginning of us gaining trust in the FLDS long before we met Sam Bateman. I mean, I think we met Sam maybe 9 months after we moved there.
So, Christina, what I'm really curious about is you are doing such an incredible job with behaviors of trust, as I define them, as open, honest communication, transparency, and vulnerability, and doing the number one thing we did in the spy recruiting world is identifying a critical life challenge that someone has and being a resource for them solving it. And so that was so intuitive to you. And I think it's one of the greatest reasons why you're so successful with the people's lives that you touch. But I'm also curious, the title of the show is Trust Me, Your Daughter's all about Trust Me, her podcast. Define trust. What does trust mean to you? How do you define it?
I think it is when you know you can count on someone to be acting in integrity and have your best interest at heart. It's the, I don't even know how much truth is important in trust, because when I think about my experience, the truth could be evaluated different ways. Yeah. I was being deceptive by acting as if I was okay with the things that Sam was doing.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But the bigger issue was that the real truth, they didn't know. And right. If I wanted them to get to the truth, I had to get Sam out of the picture, no matter what it took.
And you were one of the things I like defining trust as is, like you said, it not necessarily have to be truth, especially in situations where you're saving lives, but it's really predictable behavior. And you were so consistent, and you started way before the meeting. Was this part of your plan or just who you were about being that person that could be this life-saving person without even inflicting yourself? You were invited in, and so those are the greatest relationships that people see from that opposite side is someone that they can invite in to be that resource when they need it, unobtrusively, and you were so consistent with your delivery. Was that part of it, or planned, not planned, or just rolled with it?
It wasn't planned. It was just an empathetic instinct. These people need help. And I had an advantage because I was not ex-FLDS. See, the town was primarily full of innies and outies. So like people who were still in the FLDS and people who were out. And then there was me and just a small few others. So here I was, a neutral person. So they could talk to me more easily than they could talk to a former member. I mean, the former members were called apostates. So they... talking to them was a no-no. So I knew I had this special opportunity, and I began offering services. Once they were evicted, they needed to find a place to live. How are they going to do that if they don't go on the internet? So I sat there for hours being the internet fingers for so many people. I mean, days, months, trying to help people find a place to live, trying to help people understand what a mortgage is. Some people didn't even know what that word was. Some people didn't have credit. I mean, I helped many people get their very first email, learn how to do the at sign. So I was there being of service just because they needed it. And I know it wasn't a plan at all.
Well,
Bateman obviously becomes part of the picture here with folks. I mean, the folks that he I don't know if the word is recruited or bamboozled or manipulated. There's so many words we could use for what he did. But the people that were coming into his fold were believing that he was speaking for Warren Jeffs, that he was part of that ecosystem. He's the next chapter, if you will, basically. The folks that were believing him, that were beginning to follow him and trust him, were those ex-FLDS at that point in time, or were they still FLDS and they just thought, oh, this is just the next natural evolution of our faith?
That's a great question. They were still FLDS. They still believed in Warren Jeffs, and Sam became an imposter, mm-hmm. saying that he was like the new voice of Warren Jeffs, and that Warren Jeffs had died and was speaking through him. So he took upon himself the mantle of being a prophet. That's why they believed in him. Mm-hmm. But only a few of the FLDS, only a small few, ended up falling for his scam. Mm-hmm. Most FLDS were like, no way. We're not having anything to do with you. We're not even letting you near our daughters, you know, and so he was not FLDS. He was an offshoot doing his own thing.
Were there any others trying to pull Sam's scheme? Or was it just, I mean, it seems if you're a very manipulative, evil human being, this is ripe hunting ground for doing this sort of thing. Are there other Batemans or was there other Batemans running around, or was Bateman just kind of the lone wolf that was having access to all the sheep?
Oh, there were others, all right. When Warren Jeffs stopped communicating frequently, I mean, he hadn't communicated to the community in a number of years. So it was a ripe opportunity for wolves in sheep's clothing to come in and seize upon that. He was not the only one. I don't want to mention the names of the mm-hmm. other ones, but we still have a worry that other ones will be coming forward as well.
Yeah, what was it about Sam? I mean, this guy had failed so completely in so many aspects of life. What was it that made him just the right person at the right time, or was it not necessarily him, but those that were vulnerable to someone like him that made him more successful than these other people?
I think it was his narcissism. He had such nerve to claim that he was communicating directly with God. And then he would stay in character, and he would even do these actions with his body. Like he was like looking up, seeing angels, and he'd be like, he would go like this. And then he would act as if he just had an impression from God. And, you know, people weren't used to being bamboozled. They weren't mm-hmm. used to being snowed like this. They didn't expect that somebody would have the nerve to be lying about something so important. I think it was their naivete held up against his predatorial instincts that gave him the advantage.
And the second part of that, and I'm sorry, Tony, I'll let you go after this. How did you do it? How were you? We talk about this all the time in our show and in my work in the Bureau. People have leakage. When there's an incongruence between what you feel and what's come out of your mouth, there's leakage because we have this abhorrent repulsion to what these people are doing. Even though we know what to say, we know how we should be acting. But what made you so amazingly successful in this world with him and save people's lives was the fact that you were able to be congruent. You didn't have leakage. What was it that kept you from leaking your true feelings when Sam is spewing this complete nonsense, and have him who is hyper. Again, I'm curious. Do you think he was hypersensitive and really good at reading people, or so bad that you're able to get away with it with him, or were you just that awesome? Which I think you were.
Oh, he was just so bad at it. Clearly. I mean, he told Tobin and I, he trusted us with his life. He trusted us with the media more than he trusted himself. That was in the doc.
Yeah.
So, there was a little leakage. If you watch it again, you'll see that when I was in the car and Sam, you know, confessed the things that he made his girls do. And I asked how they felt. I said, are you okay? And he was saying, how did you feel? And they were saying things. And I said, trauma. And I was like, oh, I shouldn't have said that. you know, because of course those girls would be traumatized, but I could have blown it right there.
You redirected yourself, yourself so well. I mean, you saw it in real time. And when, so I think at this point, he had a positive confirmation bias with you because you're feeding that narcissism really well. And so at some point, and when was that point, do you think, where he actually shifted to a positive confirmation bias to you that allowed you to actually have moments like that, where he would dismiss the teeny little blip you gave and just look at the redirect you were doing?
I think that Tolga was my secret weapon, because Tolga is, he's very charismatic and he's hilarious. He's hilarious, by the way. And he offers so much. If you're a narcissist looking for fame, then Tolga, I mean, has this incredible backstory of his own where, you know, he was a music producer and he won Song of the Year beating Janet Jackson. You know, I mean, he knows all these celebrities and such. And Sam was drunk on power and hungry for fame. So I think that all of Toga's connections made Sam see more of an advantage to trusting in us, because he thought he could use us. Also, I thought of one more thing. By this time, we had a certain status among the FLDS. And so we had a certain status among some of the FLDS. And I think he wanted us to kind of vouch him in, because they just thought he was a monster. And if he recruited us into his group or made us friendly to his group, then maybe we would speak well of him to the FLDS so he could find more women.
Yeah. And also get his music video before the Queen.
Excellent point.
Who needs TRL when you got the Queen? You know,
exactly.
There's more to come with Christine Marie. Be sure to press subscribe so you don't miss it. Christine Marie did something almost nobody who survives a cult ever does. She walked back into one on purpose with a plan and held the lie long enough to make sure the next girls didn't end up where she'd been. That takes a particular kind of strength, a particular kind of person. But getting inside Samuel Bateman's house was only the first wall. The second one was almost worse, because once Christine had the footage, once she had the man on tape, the evidence describing what he was doing in his own words, she walked it straight to local police. And the local police watched it, acted like they believed her, and did nothing for years. We're getting into the why of that in part two. Stay with us. Press subscribe so you don't miss it, and give us your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Lots of places can expose you to identity theft. That's why LifeLock monitors hundreds of millions of data points a second for threats to your identity, which is way more than anyone can do on their own. If we find anything suspicious, like new loans or changes to your financial accounts, we alert you right away, all through text, phone, email, or the LifeLock app. Save up to 30% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.